The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Good morning and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, coming to you today from Jerusalem in the Middle East. I'm Brent Nachtigall and I'll be filling in for Stephen Flurry. It's a pleasure to be with you on this Friday. Instead of talking about Europe and Brexit today on the show, we'll be discussing some important developments in the Middle East, particularly involving the Islamic State or Daesh or ISIL, ISIS, whatever you would like to call the terrorist group that's been plaguing the Middle East for the past 2 years and Europe and even into America. But to set this up, I want to give you a clip from the Wall Street Journal's Mary Kissel talking to Brett Stevens, one of their columnists, about the recent terrorist attack in Istanbul that took place this week.
Another day, another heinous terrorist attack, this time at the airport in Istanbul. Current count is more than 40 people murdered, more than 200 injured. Global View columnist Brett Stevens joins the show. Brett, why is Turkey such an important terrorist target? This isn't the first attack.
No, and not only Turkey, but the airport. I've been through that airport many times. It's one of the busiest airports in the world. Millions of people go through it. So to the extent that Turkey has always been a bridge between, literally a bridge between Europe and Asia, it's an important target for that reason alone. Secondly, the Erdogan government belatedly has finally started acting against ISIS. It had been allowing ISIS or jihadists to move through Turkey on their way to Syria, but finally Erdogan understands the extent of the problem. So this is part of that unfolding battle. But let's not forget, an international destination, this is one way of creating an international terror event with just one attack.
Is it the kind of attack also notable here, Brett, because we had multiple attackers, it was commando style. It looks from initial reporting that there was a diversion to draw security forces out of the airport itself. They didn't even go through security.
Yeah, it was clearly a sophisticated, well-planned attack. And it's evidence of the danger that you have when you allow thousands of jihadis to travel to Iraq, Syria, get military training, and then, lo, out they go. So the notion that, in a sense, you know, we can contain what's happening in the Arab world, let it stay in the Arab world, is simply a false notion. It happened in Brussels. It happened in Tunisia. It's happened, I think this is the 10th terrorist attack in Turkey in about a year. It's going to happen many more times.
It is going to happen more times. That was Brett Stevens talking to Mary Kissel from the Wall Street Journal. Now, to just talk about some more details about this attack, I'm going to quote from the Washington Post. This is what they said. On Wednesday, a senior Turkish official gave a timeline of the attack. First, a militant detonated explosives in the arrival area on the ground floor of the international terminal. And second, a second attacker exploded a bomb minutes later in the departure area upstairs. Finally, a third bomber detonated explosives in the parking area amid the chaos as people fled to escape the attacks inside. So this was quite a sophisticated attack, definitely one that was specifically chosen by the Islamic State, different to the other attacks that they have perpetrated inside Turkey. This indicates likely that the Islamic State is changing their tactics. They were motivated to do this. This wasn't something that they necessarily thought up over the past couple of weeks. This would involve a lot more planning, a lot more sophistication than an emotional split-second decision to perpetrate this type of attack. So we'll see going forward what they will do inside Turkey. But it does come at a time where the Islamic State looks to be changing its modus operandi in some instances, even as we'll cover in this program. So what will the response be from Turkey? That is the big question. Now, the director of the Turkish Research Program at the Washington Institute of Near Eastern Policy said this about the attack. If the Islamic State is indeed behind this attack, this would be a declaration of war. a declaration of war against Turkey. He said, this attack is different. The scope, impact, and deaths of dozens in the heart of the country's economic capital. It will have widespread ramifications, this Turkish expert said. Now, he also said that Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who's depicted himself as this strong conservative leader, really cannot afford to let this go. There is going to be a demand from the public to respond to this attack from the Islamic State. Now, Turkey's been struggling a lot over the past year or so from, especially its economy has been struggling. You can recall that the statistics for the amount of Syrians currently living in Turkey is quite high. Over 2.5 million Syrians have flocked over and they're inside the Turkish borders. Then the Turkish tourism industry has taken about a 50% drop in 2016 over 2015. And this is only going to encourage less or discourage tourists from coming down to Turkey. This attack at the international airport, the 12th busiest airport in the world. And then also we've seen their economy be crippled because of Russia and Russia's decision late last year to cut off or deny Turkish exports from agricultural exports from entering into their country. So Turkey is in a bad way financially, economically, and they were becoming isolated in the region. But the events over this past week look to show that Turkey is going to return back into the international community and having a number of cordial relations, it seems, with Russia, with Israel, and even with Europe post-Brexit as well. Now, you'll recall that back late last year when Turkey shot down the Russian jet, the Russian fighter jet that was flew over its borders for a couple of seconds, it wasn't that long, that they refused to apologize to Putin, and Putin was upset by this, and that's why he had a number of these measures against Turkey. Well, that has been fixed up this week. Just before the attack, Putin and Erdogan, they got back together. Erdogan finally apologized for shooting down that fighter, and Putin accepted that apology, and he announced also that he is going to resume tourist activity, allow Russians to come down and on their tours down into Turkey now. So that relationship looks to be on the mend. And then also there was a big fixing to the 6-year cold relationship between Israel and Turkey. They did not have relations, didn't have ambassadors in each country for the past 6 years since a Turkish flotilla came down to try and break the Gaza siege. And Turkey was, and Erdogan was wanting an apology from Israel for the past 6 years. They didn't get it. Well, they got it after 3 years, but then he was after the reducing of the blockade on Gaza. But Turkey didn't get that. But this week, they decided to mend ties and normalize relations. Now, there was published in one of ISIS's newsletters this week that Turkey had, because of their relationship with ongoing relationship with Russia and Israel, that there were going to be stepped up attacks. Now, this attack would have been planned for months since it was so sophisticated. But maybe the decision to act was motivated by Turkey's growing relationship between Russia and Israel and others. Now, you can't forget, even as Brett Stevens was commenting in that short clip there, that Turkey had allowed the pretty free passage of foreign fighters to come into the Ataturk airport and then be stationed in Turkey just briefly before they headed down to Syria and Iraq to fight for the Islamic State. And Turkey and Erdogan, they pretty much gave a blind eye to this. Now, why would they do that? Well, Islamic State was fighting against the Syrian regime that for 3 years before Islamic State even existed was killing off His own, Assad killing off his own people, killing off Turkmen inside Syria as well. So they turned a blind eye to ISIS because they were fighting against the Syrian regime. Now, it looks like Turkey is coming on board with the international community. Even relations with Russia have been improved, as I said. So ISIS is obviously feeling that they've been betrayed by Turkey, and they will increase attacks like this on Turkish territory. Now, it's really interesting to just look at the Syrian civil war as it stands right now. It could easily go on for the next 100 years. Easily. But the fact that you have two different sides coming together, that is, the Russians and the Turks, that the Russians, of course, supporting Assad and supporting their influence inside Syria. That's what they want to maintain. That's why they're down there fighting in Syria with the Assad regime, with the Iranians, against the Islamic State, and also against other rebels that wanted to get rid of Assad. You have them meeting and conducting relations with Erdogan, who wanted to see Assad go. The fact that they're getting together at this time might indicate that we might have some type of truce worked out in the Syrian civil war. We'll see going forward, but it wouldn't surprise me over the next couple of weeks if we see a push towards peace in the Syrian civil war, or momentary peace, we could put it that way. Now, whether or not Turkey itself enters into the fray with its huge army, it has the strongest conventional army in the Middle East, millions of fighters, well, not millions of fighters, hundreds of thousands of fighters ready to go if they need to move ground troops in. I don't necessarily think that they're going to do that, but you might see them working together with Russia, at least on the diplomatic front, to try and get a political resolution. Now, it's important to remember when we talk about Syria that Russia is not wedded to Assad. It is wedded to its maintaining of power in Syria. Now, Turkey might be willing to allow Russia that concession if Assad is removed. Turkey might go for that as well, but we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen there. But there is something that's changing between Turkey, Russia, the United States, and even Israel, and Islamic State looks like they're aware of it, and they're changing the way that they act as well. And we're going to talk more about that in this program, how the Islamic State is responding to the West and even changing some of their strategies. Now, it looks like they're trying to provoke Turkey to enter the conflict, really confusing conflict down in Syria. It looks like they want them to do that, but we'll see whether Turkey intervenes or not. Terrorist acts like this in the capital are probably in one of the popular cities in Turkey are probably going to be increase, and there will be a reaction. There has to be a reaction, but whether that is troops on the ground or whether that is detente with Russia, we'll see. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG. That's 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma. And you can catch the live stream at thetrumpet.com or kpcg.fm. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Islamic State and their change in their modus operandi and how that is setting up a lot of biblical prophecies to come to pass. It's stunning. And I'll detail some of those when we come back. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The King of the South is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the Literature tab to select your free booklet.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Brent Nuchtigall again, coming to you from Jerusalem in the Middle East, and I'm filling in for Stephen Flurry today. As I was saying before the break, it's been amazing to see how the Islamic State over the past couple of years has really set up a lot of Bible prophecies to take place. Now, they're definitely not godly in any way, but from the situation that they are creating, a lot of these biblical prophecies are coming to fruition and are being set up, especially over the last couple of months, to come to fruition. Their very existence, the places they choose to attack, who they choose to attack, and when they choose to attack as well, are all motivating a lot of world-shaking alliances that are coming together that are prophesied in your Bible. Now, I'm not going to go back to what caused the Islamic State or the rise of the Islamic State. The fact is that the Islamic State exists. It's here today. It's in Syria, Iraq, Egypt, Libya, many of its small cells spread across Africa, the Middle East, Europe. So it is all over the world. I'm not going to touch on how Bible prophecy is moving ahead in Libya because of the Islamic State, or how Bible prophecy has been moving ahead in Europe because of the actions of the Islamic State. We're going to keep it into the Middle East here. Now, Brad McDonald, another writer for thetrumpet.com, he's been on this program, and he's talked about how much Iran has benefited from the Islamic State. And if we're going to talk about Iraq, the nation of Iraq, we can see how that's the case, how much Iran has benefited. Iran, of course, in Iraq, and their Shiite militias, who really, they just answer to Iran, they're working in collaboration with the Iraqi security forces and the United States. They're working with the United States to try and remove the Islamic State from southern Iraq. Now, this is giving way for Iran to dominate Iraq, a prophecy that we've been talking about here at the Trumpet for 20 years, that as you create the vacuum there of power in Iraq, going back to the days of Saddam Hussein, the one that is going to capitalize on that power is Iran. Well, in the intermediate time, we had this group Islamic State that has capitalized on a lot of the vacuum that existed in the post-United States deployment in Iraq period. And who is taking advantage of that vacuum now once the Islamic State is defeated? Well, obviously, that's Iran. And what's so stunning about this in the post-nuclear deal world that we have is that the United States is completely comfortable. Let's just say the United States administration is completely comfortable working with Iran to defeat the Islamic State. And it seems they're comfortable with the result. I just want to play on this point a clip from the Secretary of State, John Kerry. This is from yesterday.
Now that Iran is at that table with you, obviously they want to protect Assad a little bit, but they also are very fervent in getting rid of Daesh, like mm-hmm. we are. Are they being more helpful or more harmful?
Well, I know this will fall. I mean, look, we have challenges with Iran, as everybody knows. And we're working on those challenges. But I can tell you that Iran in Iraq has been, in certain ways, helpful. And they clearly are focused on ISIL, Daesh. And so we have a common interest, actually.
Yes, in Iraq, they are helpful, because it is serving their purposes, and the United States is going along with that whole program. And surely they can see who's going to benefit most from Islamic State's demise in southern Iraq. Now, it's interesting that northern Iraq, for the time being, is left alone. You remember that the United States wanted to take back Mosul, huge city in northern Iraq, from the Islamic State, and they were bringing all the parties together to fight this battle. But then Iran said a couple of weeks ago, no, No, we don't want to bring our ground forces, the militias, and even we're not going to direct the Iraqi military force into taking Mosul. Let's take Fallujah first in southern Iraq. So America, realizing it can't defeat ISIS without Iran's backing, and that's really the honest truth, unless they decide to put boots on the ground, they said okay. And last week, what did we see? We saw Fallujah in southern Iraq fully liberated, if you can call it that, from the Islamic State. Now, Fallujah has been mostly destroyed. A lot of the Sunnis that were in the city when Islamic State were in control of it, they were, as they tried to escape Islamic State, they were caught, and some of them were subjected to torture, not by the Islamic State, but some of these Shiite militias, they're so-called liberators. But who's going to gain the power there? Well, obviously, the Shiite militias, Iran, is going to gain the power after Islamic State goes. So while, even as Brad McDonald talked about, while Iran might not have given rise to Islamic State necessarily or been pushing it, certainly it looks like their fingerprints are even over its beginnings, but they have definitely benefited the most from its rise, and they're going to benefit the most from its downfall. Now, when we hear about the Islamic State, we all think of the horrific, horrific actions that they are taking, and that the torturous, we're not going to go into the gory details of what they do, but obviously they are one of the most destitute morally groups that there are in what they are willing to do to human beings. But when we hear about them losing a battle, or when we hear about them losing a city, we have to ask, what's next? What's next after ISIS loses Fallujah? What happens day one when ISIS goes? And is that a better situation from when ISIS was there? Now, if you're talking about Iraq, and you talk to some of the Sunni Arabs that are there that weren't fighting for ISIS, they might tell you that life under ISIS rule was better than what it will be and what it has become under Iranian dominance. That might be shocking, but it is the truth in many cases. Now, along with their proxies in Iraq and Syria, Iran is leading the main ground force that's been called upon to defeat ISIS. And once ISIS is defeated by Iran in these individual battles, by Iran's militias, or even by the United States, with the United States backing and help, it's Iran's forces, their Shiites, that remain to maintain the peace. And that's why Jerusalem Post correspondent Carolyn Glick wrote 3 weeks ago, "Where ISIS goes, Iran shortly follows." It must be understood that where ISIS is losing ground is the precise areas that Iran is trying to defeat ISIS. The areas where ISIS still thrives, Iran has not led a concerted effort to defeat them. That's really as simple as it gets. And that's why Iran didn't want to expend effort taking Mosul in the north before it took over Fallujah in the south. It's not too concerned about ISIS in the north right now. That doesn't really concern Iran. They're worried about what's happening in southern Iraq. Now, to understand this and to see how Bible prophecy is being fulfilled through ISIS, it's good to get a map out and look at the Middle East. And if you do that, you're going to be able to visualize what Iran is up to. Now, it's Iran's main goal, or one of their goals, to control the large swath of land from its western border through Iraq, through southern Syria, through the area of Damascus, and up to Homs, all the way into Lebanon, so that it can reach the Mediterranean Sea. That is what they want to do. And there's been lots of commentators talk about this Shia crescent that they are creating, Shia being the brand of Islam that Iran leads. Now, we also need to understand that as you look at that map in front of you, that national borders as you see them there do not exist anymore. The borders between Iraq and Syria, and even, sad to say, the border between Lebanon and Syria as well, have really been washed away. Syria as a country has ceased to exist, as a nation has ceased to exist over the last couple of years, and Iraq looks to be heading that way as well. But if you look at that map and you look, and just starting north of Israel, you have Lebanon. And for the past 10 years, we're just going to talk about Iran's strategy for a moment and how they're using ISIS to ensure that this strategy comes to fruition. So if you take that map and you look just north of Israel, you have Lebanon. Now, for the past 10 years, Hezbollah, the Shiite terrorist group, they've become a really powerful political force in Lebanon. And they are sponsored completely, funded completely, entirely by Iran, and they're not ashamed of that fact. Hezbollah is very important to Iran. Again, they are on the Mediterranean Sea. They are just north of Israel, Iran's arch enemy, and they need to support Iran needs to support Hezbollah. It's one of their chief goals to ensure that Hezbollah has the funding and the hardware that it needs. Now, Hezbollah isn't ashamed of the fact that they are completely funded by Iran. This is what Hassan Nasrallah, he's the leader of Hezbollah, said last Friday. I'd play the clip of this, but my Arabic isn't that good, and I doubt yours is as well. So I'll just quote him, isn't that good as well. He said, "We are open about the fact that Hezbollah's budget, its income, its expenses, everything it eats and drinks, its weapons and rockets come from the Islamic Republic of Iran." Then he continued, "As long as Iran has money, we have money." So you can see why people are up in arms, and even on the Trumpet, we're going to have an article about this, about how Hezbollah is getting a lot of their funds from Iran. Nasrallah even said that. And why does Iran have funds right now? Well, in the post-nuclear deal age, they've got them from frozen assets from the United States, and because their economy is now growing once again because of the removal of sanctions by the Islamic State, by the United States as well. So Hezbollah in southern Lebanon on that map, they dominate that region. Now, the Shia inside Lebanon, they only represent about 26% of Lebanese citizens. That might be shocking to everyone, that the Shia are only 26% of the entire population of Lebanon. Now, they're mostly located in southern Lebanon with the border against Israel. And then they also live in the Bekaa Valley. The Bekaa Valley is basically a continuation of the Rift Valley from down in Israel. If you think of Israel, you've got the Dead Sea, and you go a little bit further north, you have the Sea of Galilee. Well, that's just a huge valley that continues all the way up into Lebanon. And when it reaches Lebanon, it's called the Bekaa Valley, and it goes all the way up into Syria. So that's one of the key territories of the Shiites as well in Lebanon. And the Shiites, again, are dominated by Hezbollah. So basically, this whole region of southern and eastern Lebanon, which borders with Syria, are already an Iranian ally. They're already allied. Then if we head east from those Lebanese mountains, we head right into Syria. And again, like I said before, Syria isn't really a nation. There is the Syrian regime that is over territory from Damascus there all the way up to Homs and bordering on the city of Aleppo, then across to the coast of Latakia and Tartus. Those cities, they belong to the Syrian regime still. That's the main power base. Now, this is where a lot of the fiercest fighting has taken place in the Syrian civil war. This area where you have the Alawites, which are a religious group that's associated with the Shiites more than the Sunnis. Now, Assad, the leader of Syria, he's an Alawite, and that's one of his reasons of being allied with Iran. They mostly live, again, they are a small percentage of the main populace of Syria. And they occupy these areas along the coast of the Mediterranean between Turkey and Lebanon, then down on the eastern side of the Lebanese border, down into Damascus, where Bashar al-Assad resides, and that's where he rules from. Now, it's this area that Iran cares for most. Now, why did the Islamic State take over the territory in northeastern Syria? Well, that's because the Syrian regime retreated from those areas. They realized that they were the Syrian civil war had been going on for a couple of years. They knew that they had to protect their main population centers of Alawites, so they retreated back westward towards the Mediterranean, towards Damascus, and they let that vacuum exist, and then in that vacuum was the Islamic State's rise. So again, we're still talking about Iran and the Islamic State and how Iran is benefiting from this fight against the Islamic State. Again, they want to control this area all the way from Lebanon all the way to Iran. So that's why they're maintaining most of their fighting power against the Islamic State and the rebels in these regions close to the Mediterranean, down to Damascus, and then heading eastward across to the Iraqi border. That's the reason why you won't find Iranian proxies fighting in northern Syria. They don't care about northern Syria right now. As long as they have their thoroughfare to the Mediterranean, they'll be happy with that. As long as that is protected, that's what they care about most. Now, the Syrian Assad, he cares about getting back complete control of his state. But Iran doesn't care that much for that right now, and that's why it's not fighting there. That's why it decided, told the U.S., no, we're not going to come and help you fight against Mosul, fight in Mosul to liberate Mosul. No, we want to fight in Fallujah, because that is along this thoroughfare. Again, Iran is using the fight against Islamic State for its personal gain, not for any other reason. Not because Islamic State's a horrible group and they want to rid it from the planet. No, they want to benefit from the removal of the Islamic State, and then they can control these regions. But there is a surprise in store for Iran. Now, while Bible prophecy does indicate that Iran is going to control Iraq, it also shows that Iran will not control Lebanon or Syria. Its desire to reach the Mediterranean with a contiguous land bridge is going to fall flat and real soon. And that failure might have everything to do with the Islamic State as well. When we come back, we're going to look at some recent changes of tactics that the Islamic State has made in the region and see how that could have everything to do with how Iran loses Lebanon and Syria.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Now, while it didn't receive much attention because there weren't too many people that were killed, there was another series of terrorist attacks that took place last week, but this time in the country of Lebanon. Now, again, the reason where we watch Lebanon specifically is because we know from prophecies found in Psalm 83 that it is not going to be aligned with Iran. And in that same prophecy, we see that Syria isn't going to be aligned with Iran neither. But right now, we see that it is aligned with Iran. Right now, we see a country that's virtually held hostage by Iran through Hezbollah. Now, again, it's important to remember that Shiites in Lebanon only make up about a quarter of the population. And through Hezbollah's stealth within Lebanon's government structure, they have virtually hamstrung the government of Lebanon for the past few years. But it's wrong to think that everyone in Lebanon is happy with Hezbollah's power. They're not. In fact, over the past few years and more recently, Lebanese are getting frustrated with Hezbollah. Even many Shiites are becoming more vocal against Hezbollah. Now, this is important because prophecy indicates, again, that Lebanon is going to fall out of the hands of Iran. Or more likely, it's going to be taken out of the hands of Iran. Now, let's just get to the news of this attack that took place in Lebanon this week. I'm going to read from Now Media. They're a Lebanese English news source, and this is what they wrote on Tuesday. Notice this. A stunning torrent of no fewer than eight suicide bombings in a single day in a single town in northeast Lebanon Monday has left the nation mourning, angry, and with no small amount of confusion. Al-Qa, a mostly Christian town situated 5 kilometers from the Syrian border, has come under occasional rocket fire over the past 5 years, but never on the scale of the carnage it experienced from before dawn yesterday till after 10 p.m. The attacks, which left 5 dead and more than 30 injured, appear to confirm fears that jihadist groups were preparing to strike the country during Ramadan and raised questions as to how so large an operation was able to slip through the many nets of the Lebanese states and Hezbollah's various security and intelligence agencies. So these attacks took place just 5 kilometers from the road between Homs and into the Bekaa Valley. And notice that there were, what to say, eight suicide bombings in a single day. What happened in Ataturk Airport, International Airport? There were 3 there. And there are 8 here. And this is something really strange for the Islamic State. They haven't, while they have attacked in Lebanon before, not in this magnitude, not committing this much attention. Something has changed. And we're not going to talk about the other attack that took place the week before on the Jordanian border from the Islamic State, but they experienced something, an attack from the Islamic State that they have never experienced before either. There is a strategy from the Islamic State to push on the external countries that are outside of Iraq and Syria. They're trying to get somebody else involved in this fight. Now let's back to this attack that took place in Lebanon. Again, this is from Now Media. The report says the attacks began shortly after 4 a.m. when local resident Shadi Makalad was said to have become aware of movement in a field outside his house. Walking outside, he discovered 4 men claiming to be army intelligence agents. Suspecting them of lying, McCullough retrieved his rifle from his house and began firing on the men, one of whom quickly detonated an explosive vest he was wearing. Shortly afterward, the other 3 blew themselves up on a nearby street, killing 5 residents. But that wasn't it. So you've got 4 suicide bombers that were coming in then. Some 18 hours later, at 10:30 p.m., a 5th suicide bomber then alighted from a motorbike and threw a hand grenade at a gathering of people outside the church, the town church, before blowing himself up. And then a 6th suicide bomber similarly dismounted a bike and detonated his explosive vest moments later. Finally, 2 further suicide bombers, hoping to reach an army position, were pursued by military intelligence officers and forced to blow themselves up without injuring any 3rd parties. No deaths were caused by the nighttime bombings. Now, this is important. When you think about fighters and where they're being sent to conduct suicide bombers, sending 8 to perform a suicide bombing, or a series of them, is a pretty big deal. Now, Al-Qaeda, this city, that's relatively unimportant. It's a Christian town on the road, though, from Syria to the main Shiite cities. This attack was intended for Hezbollah. This attack was intended for the Shiites. And again, it wasn't an attack that was taking place on Shiites or Hezbollah inside Syria. They've been doing that for a number of years. Now, they are taking the fight to Lebanon. They're taking the fight to the Shiites inside Lebanon. This is from El Monitor, another Middle Eastern news source. It says, Al-Qaeda was definitely not the initial target, said a military officer. The number of suicide bombers who seemed well-trained makes us believe that they were destined for a larger operation, that they were most probably waiting for a transporter who could have smuggled them out of Al-Qaeda and then provided them with fake identity cards, enabling them to reach another destination, possibly the cities of Baalbek or Hermon, which are two Hezbollah bastions, or even Beirut. Now, this is a shift in strategy from ISIS. Hezbollah has been fighting in Syria for 3 years on behalf of the Syrian government as ordered by Iran. They were called in to support Assad, because Assad's government was failing, and Iran needed the Assad government to stay in power so it could maintain its land bridge. Without the Syria, contiguous area of Syria, Iran can't access Hezbollah that easy. Now, they understand that. Iran does, obviously, that without controlling southern Lebanon, Hezbollah will diminish in power. ISIS is understanding that as well. So now they're starting to take the fight to Hezbollah inside Libya. Now, this is important. I just want to play a clip. This is from a Key of David program with Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flory from a couple of years ago. Now, this specific Key of David has had over 200,000 views on YouTube, and he's going to explain the situation a little bit for us.
Here's what we wrote again in thetrumpet.com. The longer Hezbollah fights in Syria, the more it is viewed by the Lebanese public as Iran's lapdog rather than a protector of Lebanese interests at home. The fact that Hezbollah continues to fight in Syria, even after huge losses, some estimate more than 1,000 fighters, shows how powerful Iran's hold is over the group. Iran controls them. And they virtually control Syria as well. Without the Syrian land bridge for Iranian arms shipments, it is likely that Hezbollah could not maintain its dominance anyhow. So the Hezbollah terrorists see that their survival is tied up in this war that's going on in Syria. And if Syria, the government there, were to fall, then they probably are going to fall right along with them. So they see that and realize that it's time for them to fight and help Iran and the Syrian government. But it isn't going to work out the way they think.
It's not going to work out the way they think. It's just not. The Iranians have got a surprise coming for them. Hezbollah's got a surprise coming for them. And these actions from ISIS might be the real beginning of that surprise. Hezbollah's support of Assad in Syria is going to backfire on them. Now, until the start of the civil war in Syria, Hezbollah's place inside Lebanon looked very strong. Hezbollah could claim that its existence was entirely necessary to counter the Israeli threat from the south. Now, most of our listeners would probably think, well, Israel's not going to fight an offensive war into Lebanon. So what's the real point of Hezbollah? But that's not the general feeling among the Lebanese. They were worried of an Israeli offensive into Lebanon, and therefore they were happy, or at least they allowed Hezbollah to act in that area because the Lebanese army was too weak. So even though Hezbollah was funded with Iran, at least they were protecting the Lebanese people. That was the thought. But that myth that they were designed purely and that to protect them against Israel was destroyed when Hezbollah entered the Syrian civil war. In supporting Iran outside its own territory, Hezbollah exposed itself as a stooge of the Ayatollahs rather than a protector of Lebanon. Now, they've entered that war in 2012. They're still fighting. Nasrallah said this week that they're going to fight more and more and more, specifically in the city of Aleppo, where they've lost 25 men in the past week or so. And Lebanese people are getting pretty much fed up, because what they see is right now, ISIS is saying, well, you're fair game in Lebanon. If you're going to come, if Hezbollah fighters are going to come into Syria to support the Assad regime, then Lebanon is fair territory to bring the fight to you. Now, there is going to be an increase in attacks that take place in Lebanon by Islamic State against Shiite targets. But if Shiites die, if Christians die, if Sunnis die in Lebanon, it doesn't matter. The fact is, the fight was brought there purely because Hezbollah was fighting in Syria. That's at least the way that the Lebanese public are going to see it. Now, there's even a lot of talk among many Shiite families within Lebanon that they are feeling uncomfortable with the way that Hezbollah, or they're being ordered by Iran to fight. There's a lot of sons and even daughters that have died because Iran has ordered their sons into the fight in Syria. So even amongst Lebanese and some of the most ardent supporters of Hezbollah in the past, they're removing that support. For every death in Lebanon at the hands of ISIS or any other terrorist organization, the majority of the people are going to blame Hezbollah. Now, it seems that with this series of bombings that took place, that they didn't have a big death toll, but they desired a much bigger death toll. It indicates a strategy change from Islamic State and others. They've realized that it is just as important, if not more, to strike in Lebanon than it is to strike in Syria. Here's what Naharet, this is another Lebanese daily, reported yesterday. They said the situation has become harder in light of reports. This is the situation inside Lebanon. The situation has become harder in light of reports alleging that the terrorist groups are using new tactics of bringing candidates for the attacks they carry out from outside Lebanon. They're bringing in people from outside Lebanon to do this. The source added that the danger lies in that most of the sleeper cells inside Lebanon are under close monitoring, and the security apparatuses have data that help them identify and arrest them. If the terror group started bringing their members from outside Lebanon, the security forces will no more be able to obtain the required information. So it's going to be harder to track them. They aren't going to have the intelligence on these people since they're coming from out of the country and they're slipping through the defensive net that Hezbollah and the Lebanese army have tried to create to ensure that none of them come into Lebanon. Then this source added that 7 of the 8 suicide attackers in the town of Qar were unknown Syrian nationals, and that their pictures were shown to detainees, that is, people that have been arrested inside Lebanon for collusion with the Islamic State, who only recognized them as participants in training centers for brief periods without being able to identify their names. But according to the detainees' confessions, the 7 criminals came from Syria, specifically from Raqqa. Specifically from Raqqa. These Syrians that tried to attack Lebanon, well, they did attack Lebanon and were searching for Hezbollah targets, they came from Raqqa. Where's Raqqa? Raqqa is the capital of the Islamic State Caliphate. They were sent from headquarters. They were sent to Lebanon to do this. And to get there from Raqqa, they had to pass through a lot of other Syrian regime targets. But they decided not to attack them. No, they're bringing the fight to Lebanon. ISIS has decided that it's going to bring the fight to Lebanon. Now, in the program that where the clip that we just played, Gerald Flory also said that this civil war in Syria was going to bring civil war to Lebanon. Now, that's not a pleasing announcement to make, though it is the truth. Lebanon is already almost a failed state. A quarter of their current population is Syrian refugees, Sunnis, that could easily rise up against Hezbollah for supporting Assad, the very leader that forced them to flee their country. It's an extremely unstable country. Now, it's easy to see how bringing the fight to Hezbollah in Lebanon is going to ignite a civil war where Iran, Hezbollah, and Syria all end up on the losing side. Is this a shift that we are seeing in ISIS's strategy to bring about those prophecies that show that Lebanon is going to fall out of Iran's hold? Now, while we can't be certain that it is, or this is going to be the thing that kicks it over, we can see from other areas in the world, from Iraq, from Libya, and even into Syria, how the movements of Islamic State have already furthered Bible prophecy. Now, Islamic State, as I said before, is definitely not led by God, but the situations they are creating in Iraq, in Syria, in Turkey, in Libya, in Europe, and now in Lebanon, they're all furthering Bible prophecy. It's truly stunning to witness this. Now, to understand these prophecies and the alliances in the Middle East and the stunning conclusion to them as well, I recommend that you read and request The King of the South. It's just been updated. It's packed with foresight that is going to give you a complete understanding of the complicated events in the Middle East. They're very complicated, but we can't just throw up our hands and say, I don't understand it. I'll wait till it's done and then Bible prophecy will be fulfilled. No, God asks us, He commands us to watch. And He commands us, really, to be able to watch, you have to educate yourself. You have to get maps out. You have to know what the prophecies say. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to dedicate 10 hours a day to the study of world events, but you do need to keep track of the news. But then you also need to keep track of what we're writing at thetrumpet.com for you, what Mr. Gerald Flurry is putting out on the Key of David program, even this program from Mr. Stephen Flurry. Listen, be educated, and then be amazed. Amazed when these prophecies come to pass. God has laid it all out for us. We are without excuse if only we will take advantage of those resources that He gives us. This is the end of today's program of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG. We're streaming online at kpcg.fm and over the air in Edmond, Oklahoma on 101.3 FM. From Jerusalem, I send you all a hearty Shabbat Shalom. Have a wonderful weekend.